to the Jeff Porch Show at Up and Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Thursday morning. So the Cub, Jerry Carl, about an hour, running for Congress here in the 1st Congressional District in South Alabama. Charlotte Knox, Mobile County Circuit Court Clerk. And finally, State Representative Chris Blackshear of Phoenix City, one of the architects of the much-discussed gambling legislation. Going to make some time for us in that 11 o'clock hour as well. In the meantime, 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. You text me. That's how you do it. But joining us now on the line, he's our state auditor here in Alabama, our good friend Andrew Sorrell. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing great. It sure was good to see you at the State of the State the other night.
Yeah. You and I had a long conversation. For the sake of old times, what was your takeaway from that?
You know, I think this is, I was excited about the school choice, honestly. I mean, the governor making that her number one legislative priority. I thought that was incredible. And then, you know, on kind of the lighter side of the question, you know, I remember sitting in the windowsill with my wife watching the State of State 5 years ago when I was a freshman state representative and had a much better seat this time there in the front row. So there are a couple perks that come with my job, and I guess that's one of them. But overall, I thought the speech was good. I thought it was well received. And I'm excited. I've been emailed a copy of this school choice bill, and I need to dig into the details there. So overall, I'm kind of optimistic for the session, at least on that front.
Yeah, and that school choice bill, I mean, you've been following the school choice discussion for a long time. It looks like it's not the way they've been explaining it to me. This is the first step, right? The concern is, though, steps two and three, will they ever be able to get there, I guess? Oh, do you think that's a legitimate concern?
Yeah, it is a legitimate concern. I wish we were going more whole hog with the approach. I mean, I'm a universal school choice guy. Give it to everybody. Don't put exclusions in there for, you know, income or whatever else. I mean, I don't know that we need to phase in. I think we have enough money in the ETF. We could just absorb the cost of the entire school choice program. Excuse me. Just make it universal in year one. That would be my preference with the way it was handled. But it doesn't look like that's the way that it's going to go down. So, you know, how many years will it take before the program is universal? And another question is, you know, will homeschoolers be treated equally with the private schoolers and public schoolers? And what I mean by that is this current version of the bill, the homeschoolers get less money in their education savings accounts than the school children of other types. You know, like I said, the private, the charter, and the public schools. They get less money. So I don't know that that's particularly fair. There's a lot of homeschoolers in my community, and I don't think they're going to care for that section of the bill. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm going to continue to speak out in favor of school choice, and I'm going to continue to push for what I think we ought to do, which is let's just go ahead and fund the thing. I mean, even in states where they've had school choice for years, only about 3-5% of students ever take advantage of it. So I don't think it's going to be as big of a hit to the ETF as everyone is worried about. I think their concerns are way overblown. When I got in the legislature, our education budget was, best I remember, it was less than $7 billion. It was $9.2 billion, I think, last year, and it'll be even higher this year. Governor said that in the State of the State. The number keeps going up, and this is going to be another record year. We have the money in the ETF to implement the school choice program, I feel.
Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on that. But let's transition here. I want to get you on this more, talk a little presidential politics. Obviously, you were a DeSantis supporter. That didn't quite work out. Talk about what you're turning your attention to now.
Well, I'm going to swap my endorsement from DeSantis to Donald Trump. You know, I was the first elected official in Alabama to endorse Ron DeSantis. There are a lot of reasons to be excited about him, about his record of winning in Florida, and about his positions on issues. I thought he was a great candidate. He was very similar to Ronald Reagan in my mind. DeSantis is out of the race, and I think Trump is our best option. I think, honestly, it's time for the Republican Party to unite behind Donald Trump. I believe he's going to be our nominee. I'm not a Nikki Haley fan. I think Nikki Haley is very establishment, and I think Trump stands better odds of beating Joe Biden than Nikki Haley does. And honestly, Nikki Haley continuing to stay in the race is costing Trump money. He's having to spend money in these primaries to win these primaries, money that he really needs to be using against Joe Biden to win this general later on this fall. So I'm going to go ahead and swap my endorsement to Donald Trump. I'm going to give him my full support from now through Election Day. And hopefully we can take this presidency back from Joe Biden.
And the Nikki Haley phenomenon kind of, she doesn't appear like she's going to be getting out of this anytime soon. And she could really, I think, get hammered in South Carolina, her home state.
That is part of what's prompting me to come out publicly for Donald Trump, is because it doesn't look like Haley is anywhere close to dropping out. I mean, she literally ran on the Nevada ballot against nobody and still lost. They voted for none of the above. I mean, she couldn't even break 50% when Donald Trump wasn't on the ballot against her. So I don't think that she has the momentum to really be a factor in this race. She's going to her home state of South Carolina, where the man she appointed to the U.S. Senate, Tim Scott, has endorsed Donald Trump, where Trump is currently pulling ahead of her. If you can't win your own state, I just don't see how you think you have a pathway to the nomination. I mean, I remember back in 2016, Kasich didn't do very well, but at least he won Ohio, right? At least he won the state he was from. And Nikki Haley's not going to do that. So does she stay in? Does she continue to be stubborn and stay in? Is she just hoping maybe that Trump gets convicted and she becomes the nominee because she's the last one standing? Like, I don't know what her strategy is, but I don't think she has any kind of viable path. And at this point, she's really hurting the Republican Party by staying in the race. And that's part of what's prompting me to go ahead and come out and support her, Trump, is because I think it's time for elected officials and party members to start lining up and saying, Trump is going to be our nominee. Let's get behind him. Let's give him our support. We've got to win the presidency back.
Joined by Andrew Cirilli, our state auditor here on the program. Andrew, are you surprised about how well Trump's doing in these polls? I know that the polling can be suspect at times, and Joe Biden's not setting the world on fire, but I'm generally skeptical of polls and very, very hesitant to get too excited about these polls showing a head-to-head matchup between Joe Biden and Trump, winning a head-to-head matchup between he and Joe Biden in the popular vote.
Yeah, I don't trust polls, especially this far out. This far out, the media uses polls to drive a narrative. And, you know, I mean, in Alabama, I know that Donald Trump is very popular, but nationwide is Donald Trump, you know, I've seen him in some polls up 2 or 3 against Biden. I've seen him tied. You know, really, the national polls don't matter that much anyway, even if they are accurate, because what actually matters is where is Donald Trump versus Joe Biden in a swing state like Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania? Those are the only polls that actually determine the presidency. I mean, if Trump runs his numbers up, you know, in a red state from 62% to 64%, That helps the national polling average, but it doesn't help him win the presidency. So what I want to look at are the swing state polls and see where we're at there. And I haven't paid too much attention to those recently. Again, I think we're too far out at this point. But I do think that Trump has significant momentum. I mean, yes, the stock market is at all-time highs, but people are not happy with Joe Biden. It's so funny because right now, you know, normally when the economy is doing well, when unemployment's low, when the stock market's at an all-time high, people are feeling good about their retirement accounts, there's a general sentiment in the economy that the economy is doing well. But nobody has that sentiment. Everybody I talk to right now is feeling broke. So I've never seen this happen before in history. You know, I remember back in 2008, I knew it was going to be tough for Republicans to win the presidency because the economy was in the toilet. You know, we had the real estate market crash and everything in 2007. And Barack Obama used that successfully against us and kind of rode that wave of dissatisfaction with the economy back into office. In 2020, I remember thinking, man, this economy is just booming. Everything is going wonderfully. There's no way we lose this race. Then COVID hit, you know, and then we had all the mail-in ballots and all that drama. And I think the Democrats were honestly cheating in some of these states to get more votes than they actually deserved. But this election cycle is different, because the numbers all say one thing, but the public sentiment is the exact opposite. And because it is, I think that gives Trump a very, very good chance of defeating Joe Biden. But the focus, again, in the polling, which was what your question was about, that's the only polls that matter are about 5 or 6 swing states.
Well, let's talk about, what do you think Trump needs to do from this point forward? I mean, is it really just focus on those swing states? Well, what would you, if you were his campaign strategist, he had his ear, what would you tell him to do?
Okay, so let me give you a little more joking answer to your question. The best thing Trump could do right now is probably be indicted again. I mean, that's what seems to help him the most. Now, I don't wish that on him. but either be indicted again or come out and be found innocent on some of these charges. I think either of those two things happening would give Trump a big boost. But what I think the Trump campaign has done very successfully with all of these indictments is say, they're not after me, they're actually after you. I'm just a figurehead. If they get me, you're next. And I hear a lot of people, you know, in church on Sunday morning, they're repeating that. They say, you know, they're really after us. They're really after us conservatives. We're going to be next. And I thought, wow, that is some really, really effective messaging on behalf of the Trump team. And I think if you could clear some of these lawsuits up, you could obviously preserve some more money. A lot of the Trump team money is being spent on lawsuits right now. If you could get Nikki Haley to drop out of the race, I think that would preserve some cash. Yeah, I think you got to start raising money and start stockpiling it for the general. You know, it's really too early to be spending money.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any enthusiasm for Joe Biden. And I mean, sometimes it's hard to see that with the news media and the way they cover things. But, like, you take yourself out of that equation, and he's going to need something to get people motivated. Biden, that is, to get motivated to come out to vote now in 2020. It was, hey, we got to get Trump out of office. What can they do in the next 9 months or so to pull that off?
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with what you're saying here. I mean, when we had the presidency in 2020, when our guy was on the ticket as the incumbent, I think there's always a sense of, well, do I really need to go vote? I mean, Trump's the incumbent. He's probably going to win. And meanwhile, the Democrats are fired up after 4 years of Trump giving us tax cuts and putting good people on the Supreme Court. They're fed up with Trump, and they showed up in droves, you know, to throw him out. And then I already mentioned, I think that, you know, they were ballot harvesting and doing all kinds of other things that they shouldn't have been doing either. So those two factors combined led to Joe Biden getting sworn in as president three or four years ago. Now they've got the problem that we had. Now their guy's the incumbent. Now they don't have the enthusiasm as much on their side. And Republicans are mad. I mean, after 3 years of Joe Biden, after the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, after multiple wars breaking out, you know, we got the Ukraine invasion happened under his watch. We've got the Israel-Palestine conflict. All these things, I don't understand how anybody thinks that Joe Biden has done a good job really on anything. The border's open. People are flooding through. I think Republicans are going to be fired up to go vote this November, much more so than the Democrats. And I really do think that that's going to play to our advantage.
What is going to make 2020 different? I mean, 2024 different from 2022? That, lessons stellar results, a very unpopular president in the White House. Yeah, very lackluster results in that midterm.
Yeah, so the big difference between 2022 and 2024 is going to be maybe some of the enthusiasm for the people who are upset about the Roe v. Wade being overturned. You know, they kind of took it out on Republicans in 2022. And, you know, Republicans had a disappointing midterm. We didn't have the red wave we were supposed to. We barely took back the House. We had a red wave here in Alabama. We had one in Florida. We didn't really get one anywhere else. But this time, are Democrats going to be equally as upset about Roe v. Wade in 24 as in 22? Probably not. And I think, again, that's another factor that I think is going to help us. And, you know, on that note, it's not all just about who wins the presidency in 24. Are we going to keep the House? That's another big storyline. Could we possibly swing the Senate? You know, who knows? It's really too early to predict. We've only got a 4 or 5 seat majority in Congress right now. And I think it's 5. And let's say, you know, I hate to say it, but we might be down another 2 because of the Congressional District 2 situation we have here in Alabama. Now, I'm still optimistic we can pull that out. Thankfully, the Alabama Republican Party has a lot of money on the sidelines. And whoever our nominee is, whether Brubaker, Albritton, Caroline Dobson, whoever's leading that race right now, if they end up as our nominee, maybe they have a shot and we can hold that seat. But if we lose it, that's a 2-seat swing. You take one away from the Republicans, you give it to the Democrats. That drops your 5-seat majority to 3 seats just based on Alabama. So, again, too early to predict who's going to hold. But, you know, what happens if Trump wins but the Democrats control both houses of Congress? I mean, that's going to be another problem for Trump and his agenda. I mean, remember, when Trump was elected in 16, he had both houses of Congress the first 2 years. That's how he's able to get the tax cuts through. That's how he's able to repeal the individual mandate on Obamacare. He's really going to be hamstrung if he doesn't have Congress as well.
Well, and last question, we'll get you out of here on this. Just your feeling about that second congressional district, because I'm down here in the southern part of it. It just seems like it was kind of slow developing, and it still doesn't seem like it is especially with this crowded field, like it's really taken off yet.
I'm going to tell you right now, Jeff, I think that Congressional District 2 comes down to, is gambling on the ballot in November or not? If gambling is on the ballot, I think it drives Democrat turnout up, and I think Republicans lose Congressional District 2. If gambling either doesn't pass or it passes, but it's put on a different ballot rather than the November general election ballot, which, by the way, I mean, would be the obvious and smart thing to do, is just change the date, hold a special election for it, or throw it on the ballot a year or two from now, you know? I mean, either way, we can't afford to risk Congressional District 2. I think it's really bad strategy to put it on the ballot this November. And I've been very public about saying that. So, but in the version of the bill that was introduced that I saw, you know, the headlines on yesterday, it's got it on the ballot in November. And I think we're setting ourselves up for a defeat. And I don't know that we'll ever forgive ourselves. If we lose Congressional District 2 by 2 points and gambling was on the ballot, I think everyone's going to always point back to that and think, boy, that was really dumb on the part of Republicans.
Andrew, we're out of time, but you've been very kind to come on. Keep us updated on what's going on in the auditor's office next time we get you on.
Yes, Jeff, thank you so much. Enjoy the discussion.
Thank you. That is a state auditor, Andrew Sorrell, right there. We got to get a timeout in here. Be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.